Hi, it's Kim West, the Sleep Lady, and today I'm here with Sally Neuberger. Welcome, Sally.
Thanks, Kim. Hi.
Hi. Sally is a licensed clinical social worker with over 30 years of clinical experience with children and parents who have developed and has developed Ready, Set, Go Potty. This innovative coaching approach to potty training developmentally ready preschoolers in a three-day weekend requires developmental readiness, parental ability to cheerlead rather than direct, humor, patience, and fun. Ms. Neuberger guides eager parents through this process in Metro DC potty training workshops as well as individually via phone coaching. She works with parents of multiples, of reluctant poopers, and resistant sitters, and offers more typical counseling support to children who require more emotional support around this important skill. So, Sally, I'm so happy you could be here with us today because, of course, just like eating and sleeping, everybody has to go pee and poop. And
yep,
we have to, all of us have to, help our child learn that important life skill. And it's a big one, I certainly realize. So I'm hoping we can get through. I have some great questions for you, and we can get started.
Great.
So, of course, I'm always interested, just like people ask me, how did I get into sleep? How did you get into the potty business?
Well, thank you for having me. I've always been interested in parenting and the developmental issues of young children. Started my career working in a reparenting program, also working with adolescent parents, and always the issues of how children accomplish developmental tasks, both with maintaining their integrity and their enthusiasm for learning other tasks.
Mm-hmm.
So I began, in fact, working with children experiencing developmental lags, speech-language lags in a preschool setting. And due to those speech-language lags and also sensory issues, motor issues, they missed potty training. So those parents of 4 and 5 year olds were saying, well, language is better, speech is better, motor is better, but now how are we going to get this done? So I worked in conjunction with an OT. We did a really highly intensive and focused weekend approach to potty training, and it really worked. And it's really worked and really worked and continues to. And over time, I have generalized it to typical kiddos with an expertise in some of those atypicalities as well.
Okay.
And from that, Ready, Set, Potty was born.
Yeah, that's often how it is, And obviously, you had an interest, and it was something you had a passion for and wanted to and were good at.
Yeah, it was interesting. It was a real challenge to help figure out how to get kids to recapture a skill that they had missed. And in fact, that sort of led to this notion of, sort of window one and window two of potty training, and which is pretty innovative. I have not seen that in any other potty training literature.
So that leads me, this is perfect, because that leads me to my next question, and that, there are other, just like there are other sleep experts out there, there are other experts on potty training, and I even remember, looking at different ones with my own kids and what to do. So how is your method unique from other people's approaches?
Well, I also have looked at lots of potty training methods, and the reality of it is that they're all going to work.
Mm-hmm.
So how a parent chooses which one is the best match for them depends on how they view their child's development and also how they sort of view their time, their own family time. What makes Ready, Set, Go Potty unique, it's sort of three-pronged. The first one is the fact that in my method, there are two windows of opportunity for children, one obvious and one subtle. The obvious one occurs somewhere around the second birthday when kids are excited by potty and they want to pee and they want to be like mom and they want to look under the seat as dad pees on the potty or poops. So it is the social excitement and it's the skill excitement. And kids are interested and willing and able and functioning for maybe a month, and then all of a sudden it stops.
Oh, and my, only a month? That's short.
Right. And that's been for a month, and then all of a sudden they wake up one day and mom says, do you want to, you know, oh, go potty? And they're like, no. And then begins this dance, you know, the long dance of persuasion and rewards and crankiness. And that process, they can sort of stick with it and cajole and do all of the stuff they need to do and have a million accidents for the next 3 or 4 or 5 months. And then their kiddo will be trained. The other option is to let the window go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let that 2 1/4 or 2 1/2 year old, let the window go, turn the potty seat into a planter, and then move, let them move on, and then come back to it. The problem is that parents keep saying, aren't you ready to go potty? Don't you think you should go potty? And developmentally, they've moved on to other cool things. You know, they're doing science experiments, and they're busy motorically, and they're expanding cognitively. They're no longer interested in potty training. So that's why right around the 3rd birthday, children are ready. And instead of saying, don't you want to, we say, your body is now ready to do this. Yahoo, let's proceed. So that's
Sally, I want to make sure I understand you correctly. So, and maybe it's not so linear, but if you miss that 1 month window that's somewhere around 2, and for whatever reason, then you let it go until they're around 3, and then you come back?
Well, most kids, one of the first things I ask in working with families is whether they had that window. And 99% of children have window 1.
Mm-hmm.
And then parents have this frustration because they were interested right around. Sometimes it's even earlier. Sometimes it's 18 months, and parents say they can't possibly be ready.
Mm-hmm.
And then their interest goes away. That was window 1.
Mm-hmm.
And then any time for girls, just because they're socially and probably motorically slightly more mature at this age. So generally, girls are ready to really do the do somewhere around 2 3/4. And boys, I just say celebrate the 3rd birthday party and then do it the next weekend. And my success rate around that window 1 and window 2 has been about 99%.
Wow, great.
So that's one of the things that makes the approach unique. And I really haven't seen that in the literature, and it's all based on my anecdotal, you know, experience. So the second thing is...
Well, and your knowledge about child development.
For sure,
of course.
Certainly. But the literature really doesn't describe this window 1, window 2. They all ask the parent to capture window 1. And I would suggest that if you wait for window 2, you get done in a 3-day period. So, you know, parents can choose, do they want 6 months or 3 days? Now, there's a lot of pressure from, you know, grandmas and in-laws and you know, know-it-all adults who say, oh, you know, you were trained in utero, what's wrong with your kiddo? So there's a certain pressure of, you know, I need to get...
Or going to preschool.
Oh, well, the preschool thing's a really interesting one, right. And so for those who are on the preschool deadline, they, you know, we try to approach this, you know, a little bit earlier. But in general, preschoolers are more understanding of those differences than they were 5 and 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And they're able to work with families, especially if they know that families are, you know, right on the cusp of the skill.
Hmm. That's good to know.
So so the window 1 and window 2 is one of the first things that makes it unique. The second is that whole shift from asking parents to be directors, which we're all awesome at, to being cheerleaders, which, you know, if you think about the difference between a director and a cheerleader, a director is someone who says, let me give you information about how to do this. Let me show you. Let me tell you, because you don't yet have the skill. And a cheerleader is one who assumes that the skills are in place and that youngsters are ready to move forward. And so Parents who are ready to be cheerleaders around this skill rather than directors are also ready to hand over independence on, you know, I love that you mentioned at the beginning those three skills of, you know, you can't make a kiddo eat, you can't make him sleep, and you can't make him poop.
Mm-hmm.
So this is one where you really hand over the skill and the knowledge base,
yeah,
assuming that they have it.
Yeah. I use that same similar metaphor in Good Night, Sleep Tight with Sleep, only I say like being a coach to a sports team. You know, that you're being there to offer, you know, support and constructive feedback and all the pieces, like a cheerleader. But in the end, you can't go out on the field and make the goal for them.
That's right.
Which would
and,
be
you know,
more like a director, I guess.
Well, perfect. That's exactly right. And I think that when we hand that autonomy over to children, it, that is the basis of true self-esteem. You know, one of the things that we hear in the media is that children are getting all sorts of false praise. I sort of feel that way about pull-ups, is that pull-ups is a form of passing along to kids that they have a skill that they don't really have.
Mm-hmm.
And that you don't, you know, kids are going to get genuine self-esteem from the skills they develop. And while they will love our rah-rahs, the bottom line is that it's the foundation of that that helps them to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And feel confident about risk-taking in other areas of their life.
So it's having faith in our children.
Absolutely. And not having faith before they're ready for us to.
And, right, not pushing it.
Yeah. That's right, having unrealistic expectations.
Yeah.
You know, it's unrealistic to think that a two-year-old is going to be independent, fully independent with potty training. But it's not unrealistic to assume that for a three-year-old. So you can choose to start and plod along at two, or you can wait till three and get it done, you know, in a fast, fun weekend, which is what my method suggests.
Okay, so you're actually suggesting it's better to wait than... than to jump on the first window?
That you let window one go, and then you wait for window two. Now, the trick with window two is that it's much more subtle, and that it is in window two, kiddos, once again, aren't going to tell us they're ready, but they give us all, they give us four signals.
Okay, well, that was going to be my next question. So how does a parent know that their child's ready?
Okay, so the signals are they went through window one, which is social curiosity and some skill success, and then they dropped their interest. That's when, that's one. Then the second one is they can stay dry for up to 4 hours. The third is their ability to recognize when they're peeing and pooping.
And the fourth, is during the day, obviously.
Obviously, yes, yes. And nighttime is very separate, and nighttime generally happens 6 months after daytime occurs. The fourth is their ability to, the motor skills, to navigate independent pottying, which means their ability to pull up their pants and pull them down without assistance. That doesn't mean, you know, cute, you know, buckle and suspender and all of those kinds of pants. That just means basic, elastic, elastic pants, up and down independently. And then finally, knowledge of the potty process, of how it works and what happens. And it, once a child has those, and the, you know, lots of parents laugh around the 4 hours of staying dry, and, you know, most moms say, I can't stay dry for 4 hours. You know? And the and, you know, and the point is to
that's
be
a different
able to pull,
problem for us.
That is a different problem. That is one that, that is a postpartum issue. Yes, and you're right. That's right. That, but the idea to hold on, to be to stay dry for a minimum of 2 hours. And if kids can't do that, then they're not ready to do this independently. They can always, you know, parents can always time train their kiddos, but that's very different and very directive rather than the independent stuff of kids alerting to the cue.
Well, you know, this is a relief for me to hear, because at first when you were saying, oh, we have this window and it only lasts a month, and if you miss it, you're in trouble because you're going to have to wait a year, And I was immediately thinking about my first daughter, who she had window one, and
yep.
I was newly pregnant with my second child and nauseous
yep.
and feeling horrible.
And you let it go.
And
right.
I let it go because I couldn't, I just didn't have it in me.
Sure.
And then I regretted it, and because then I had to wait until much longer, and it wasn't.
But it was just right.
Yeah,
you
I guess
know,
I didn't
was,
think that because you get so much pressure. You know, I remember again,
you
like
do,
you mentioned,
you
my
do.
Mother-in-law came when the second baby was born. Is like, what do you mean she's not potty trained? And,
yeah,
you know,
so
traumatized her a little.
That's right. That's right. And so the foundation of ready, set, go potty is. Kids get ready, and then they get set to go.
Yeah.
So if you sort of think about it as window one is they're getting ready and set. And then, you know, a few months down the line, they go. And
yeah.
during that time, they're integrating all of their skills, which is just what your daughter did.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
That's great. Now, that's really helpful. So now we know what the signs are. So tell me about, you know, this. Everyone talks about the big girl, big boy, you know, not
yeah.
only in terms of potty, but they do that in terms of the bed, too. You
they
know?
Do.
And
I agree.
Emotions. And emotions.
That's right.
Too.
And so the idea about that is that when parents use big boy, big girl language, it really sets kids up for having to make a choice of whether they're going to be a big girl or a baby. And, you know, in the world of a toddler, there's nothing much in the middle there.
Yeah.
So instead of setting them up for that, and actually I love to use this in my work with families as a lesson of, so not only are you not going to do this with potty training, but be done with using labels, because the idea about labels is that it lays a stigma on the kiddo, and it's much better to describe the behavior.
Yeah.
So instead of using that big girl, big boy language, you know, we say, don't you want to be a big boy, because we think it's going to persuade a child that they no longer want to be babies, but it sets them up. So what I have families do is say, you will always be my baby. I will rock you until you're 100. I will
but not to sleep.
Yes, that's right. That's right. I will cuddle you forever and always.
Mm-hmm.
But your body and brain are ready to do this skill. So you describe it as you describe they're ready for progress as skill based as opposed to a label. And then they don't need to feel like they can't be one without the other.
Yeah. I like that.
Right. So we describe your body is ready to do this. This is what kids your age are ready to do. And we don't use the, you know, big girl undies versus diapers as a persuasive argument.
Yeah, because why really would you want that? Yeah.
No kidding. How scary could that be? I'll skip that. Thanks. I'm skipping that.
I like that. That's nice.
Yeah.
I feel the same way about, you know, the bed and emotion regulation too. Yeah.
Right.
But that's
how
a nice way to say it.
How do you apply that?
Yeah, that there's nothing in between, you know, baby and big girl. And what is big girl, big boy anyway? Does that mean I have to be like mommy and daddy? Like, yikes.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's too scary, because how can I accomplish all those tasks? That's a daunting idea for a young kiddo. And so when we describe the behavior we want to see rather than labeling it, it gives them the option of moving forward and also moving forward with accidents. And that's a very forgiving place for kids to be, especially those who are reluctant risk takers.
So that sort of leads me to, you know, and maybe you've said this already, but perhaps there's other points you'd like to make or just want to reiterate of why it's important for parents to be the cheerleaders with this process.
Sure. So like in summary, it's like a rite of passage. You know, the three things that kids control at that age, what they eat, if they sleep, and if they go potty. So what we want to do is to have parents be able to be cheerleaders because it changes their role. You know, when we are cheerleaders, we don't tell our kids they have to go potty. We have given them the information they need, and then we say, you know, I trust your body. You can trust your body. Let's have your body pick up the signals.
Mm-hmm.
That's different than, it's time to go potty. It's your time. Let's go. You know, mm-hmm. and having to, you know, bribe kids with the purchase of a Mercedes to go potty. That just should not need to be. So that when we shift, kids don't need rewards, because what we are rewarding them with is our attention and also with our belief in them.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why we want to be, ultimately, that's what we want to be as our cheerleaders as our kids grow. And ultimately, when our children become young adults, we are their cheerleaders. We are no longer their directors.
Very nice.
And often they timely exit our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
So it allows kids to feel independent and separate. And cheerleading assumes that children know how to do the skill, as opposed to us needing to be the ones to tell them.
Mm-hmm. That's good. I'm writing down all this great stuff. Even though I'm well past the potty training, it's just nice to know.
Great. And
so,
this stuff is all in the, by the way, and this is all in the outline that parents receive, you know, when they work with me, all of this information. So it's,
oh, fabulous.
Right.
Fabulous. And we'll get to that. And by the way, your website, tell us what your website address is.
Yay, my website address is readysetgopotty.com.
Great. And so people can go there. They can look at your websites your workshops locally. But they also, if they're not in the D.C. area, can have a phone consultation with you from anywhere in the world, right?
Correct. And I have done that. I have
right.
done that from across the country, and I have done that from other countries.
Great. That's great.
Yep.
So tell me a little bit about, I mean, I know that there's a lot to it, but maybe to give us parents an overview of what this potty training weekend is like. Is it like a torturous weekend, or do we have to cancel all our plans?
It is. Nothing. You go nowhere. You do nothing. But you supplement it with all sorts of wonderful things that occur on that weekend. So what it is a prescribed and specific process with an outline format for each day of what to do. It's got to be planned in advance. You know, I've worked with some families, and I said, you need to have a three-day weekend planned in advance where you have nothing. No music lessons, no swimming, no carpool, no synagogue, no church, no nothing, no outside play, no nothing. And I've had families say, well, I won't have a weekend like that for another year and a half. And I said, well, that's another issue. But then this isn't a good method for you. So you really have to be able to commit to a three-day weekend.
Mm-hmm. Could you do it during the week if you're a stay-at-home parent?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay,
the only value for it being a weekend is that typically that's the time that partners are home.
Yeah.
And because this is an intensive process of, you know, stay at home and kid focus, that it is a the support of a partner over a weekend is really valuable. But that can be a relative, that can be a grandma, that can be a nanny. But this is really a parent-kid process, and I really won't work with a family who wants the nanny to do the whole deal. I believe that this is a rite of passage, and at least day one and two of the weekend have to be parent-based. Day three can involve a third person.
Okay, that makes sense to me.
So it's planned in advance.
Mm-hmm.
1 month prior, parent has a conversation with their child about the fact that they're no longer going to talk about the potty, but in 4 weeks, and they show them on the calendar and maybe mark it with stickers, we are going to have a bye-bye diaper party, and it's going to be so fun. We're going to have a cake, and we're going to have pizza, and we're going to put candles on the pizza, and we're going to sing bye-bye diapers, bye-bye potty, or whatever. Hello, potty, we're going to poop, or whatever song they make
That's
up.
Good.
Creative. And then they have their Hello Potty party, and then they begin 3 days of very prescribed practice, starting out naked from the waist down, and then as the days progress, diminished timer use, increased independence, increase of clothes, and ultimately by Sunday night, if you start this on Friday morning, kiddos are in underpants, running to the potty when they need to pee, and it's done.
Okay. Wow. That sounds nice. Mm-hmm. That's great. And
I do make parents take one oath. Mm-hmm. And the oath is, I actually make them stick their hands up in the air, and that oath is that I promise, do it with me. I promise.
Okay. I promise.
When my child asks for a diaper.
When my child asks for a diaper.
To go poop.
To go poop.
I will say.
I will say.
No.
No.
And that is perhaps some of the most important information that I pass along, that lots of times people think that it's okay if kids get pee trained first and poop trained second, and oh boy, is it not.
Okay.
So
we have to do both.
You have to do both at the same time. And when kids say, you know, but I can't, but I'm going to, I don't, you know, but I can only poop in my diaper, that is when parents move into sympathetic, firm cheerleaders and saying, I know, I remember when I learned this. I was so scared because I didn't know what it would feel like to poop in the potty. I was so used to pooping in the diaper. You can do this. And then we even say, after five poops, you are going to be a poop pro. You will never be afraid of pooping on the potty again. I promise.
Mm-hmm.
But if you decide you want to poop on the floor, you go ahead and do that. You know, most kids, 99% of three-year-olds will never do that.
Very
and
good.
That's
like
how
that.
We encourage them, but mm-hmm. get them moving. And most of my mm-hmm. business, Kim, has to do with parents who did not take that oath. Those who didn't work with me, and their kids end up being fully urine trained, and therefore, and the poop just never got done.
Okay. We're going to talk about that in a minute, about,
yep.
you know, when things go wrong and how do you undo
yes.
That. I like that. You know, it's interesting in therapy with children, when I had my general practice, I would often ask the child, not of course a three-year-old, but, you know, older children, so how many times do you think you'll need to come here for us to talk about this and work through this issue? And it was amazing. They would think about it for a minute, and sometimes they would say, five. I think I'm going to need to come five times.
Isn't that interesting?
Oh, okay. And sure enough, five times,
and they were done.
They were it was resolved.
And I think that and my five is about that, you know, they deposit the first one, it's scary. The second time, I even have, you know, some of the tools that I suggest for parents to do is to take a video of their kiddo, you know, before they flush their first poop
mm-hmm.
and interview the kid about how they feel. Not that mom and dad are so excited, not that they called grandma, but that how do they feel? That
mm-hmm.
was okay. And
mm-hmm.
boy, we play that back when, you know, when they're reluctant about poop number two. But by poop number five, they really get it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kids are amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I
mm-hmm.
love that.
Yep.
So, you know, there's all kinds of talk about what kind of potty to get, and, you know, maybe you can tell me about, you know, is that important, and I think I remember you telling me in the times we've talked in the past that how a child sits on the potty matters, and can you give us some tips on that and why it's important?
Sure. I think that's one more little part of my approach that is unique.
Mm-hmm.
I really want kiddos on the floor potties,
okay.
and preferably on the floor potties with handles or places for them to hold on, because I think mm-hmm. that if you and your listeners can visualize this,
mm-hmm.
so imagine sitting in your chair and lift up your feet, and put your hands across your chest, and now push, like you're going to poop. Very complicated because of the balance issues, because you don't
know. Your back
know.
Tightens.
Your back tightens. All the wrong things tighten. Mm-hmm. So now I'm going to ask you to visualize this other one. So you plant your feet on the floor. You put your elbows on your knees, or you hold on under your chair.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I call that assuming the position, and then push.
Mm-hmm.
So much easier.
Yeah.
Like, how is that?
Right. That is. I don't feel that back tightening feeling. Mm-hmm.
Right. And you're putting the pressure where it needs to be. You know, it's really hard for kids to visualize what sort of, you know, a gentle push feels like. But when you're in that position, it's about as easy as it gets.
Mm-hmm.
So we want on-the-floor potties so that feet can be planted and we don't have to worry about all the things that kids say, like, I'm worried I'm going to fall in. I don't want, it's a long way to the, you know, when my poop plops, I don't like how it feels.
Mm-hmm.
None of that happens in your first couple of, you know, if you have the on-the-floor potty.
After
a couple of weeks, kids transition very easily back onto the regular potty, and then they can use all of the awesome, you know, all of the awesome potty seats that are out there. But for that first one, that on the floor, preferably with handles, so that kids can really get a grip and, you know, do the work that they need to do to learn this skill.
Okay, that's really helpful.
So that's potty.
Mm-hmm.
And then the sitting. A little sort of unique, too. I like what you said about the back and the pressure that it puts on the back. So when you do what I call C-sitting, and think about your body, that when your elbows are on your knees, you're in a C.
Mm-hmm.
And kids love that, too. So you could make a D-sit, which you know, or you could do a, I don't know what letter that
L.
would be. An L-sit, which would be, I'm straight up. Or the C-sit. And the C-sit is make your body into a C. Perfect. And then there are all kinds of fun activities that I recommend to families and that I give in my consultation that make the C-sit really fun and make that time sitting there fun. I'll just give you one of them. And one of them is, I call it the strong consonant name game. And when you're in that, assume the position, and you have a special potty story that you only tell when your kiddo's on the potty, and it's the story of Penny Pooper. Now, if you're in that position and you repeat back to your mom, Penny Pooper, and you say it just like that, it automatically pushes. Like silently say to yourself, Kim, Penny Pooper, and you'll feel that push, right? So any strong consonant. And that's the strong consonant name. They're game. There are lots of other ones that I do with families to help kids sort of feel the push that they need to push.
Boy, I wish I knew you 14 years ago. I would have had a much easier time. That's great. So how do you know if your child is not ready for the potty training weekend or when you're in it to call it quits, like it's not going well?
Right. You know, lots of times I help parents, my literature tries to help parents screen out when their kiddos are not ready, and I actually do ask about sensory regulatory kinds of questions when I do individualized consultation, because that stuff is very subtle, but that precisely can interfere with a child picking up cues. But the fastest way you know is to assume that when all the other conditions are in place, then you give it a try. And the criteria for me and in it that I share with parents is that if a child is less than 60% successful on day one, less than 50% successful on day two, or highly emotionally resistant, you stop. Because there's some magical thinking in this process of, yay, we're having a party, we're going to get this done. And if it is miserable for parent and child, you got to get out of it, and you have to get out of it gracefully and quickly. And then you just say to the kiddo, we're going to do this we're going to do this down the line. We're going to do this, you know, if it's...
So no forcing them and holding them down on the potty.
No, not, because when we force and hold kids, I worked with a family, working with a family right now, and the mom said, so, you know, and this is a resistant pooper, and she said, I do have to tell you that one of my, you know, that the wise grandma responded and said, you just have to hold her on, hold her on.
Mm.
So I did. Mm. And that stuff can really be, that can add complexities to things. So no, we are not holding on, and, it, you know, we're not going to chase our kids down. Now, there are great strategies that, you know, I work with parents on to help integrate potty practice into the day. One of them is, you know, I have a great Lego set, you know, I got to happen to pick up a Lego set. We're going to play it, but there's the timer. First, let's go, let's act like elephants and lumber into the bathroom. And then after you try your pee, we'll go work on this together. So that you build in transitions and you build in fun and you build in activities and excitement and positive reinforcement, not these are not bribes, so that kids are eager to do what you're suggesting because they've got you and your attention, and that's the most important thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I like that. So if you were to have an experience like that mom where the mother or the grandmother said, hold her down, or that which actually happened to me, my mother-in-law came to stay with us because I had just had the second baby and she was a couple weeks old to help out. And
right.
She's, you know, I think I was taking a nap and she decided that she was going to train my older one because I had failed to do this at the appropriate time. And she held her down on the potty. And when I found out about this, I immediately stopped all sort of efforts to talk about potty. And I really think it kind of traumatized her. And it delays it.
You know what? When kids are not there, then it's not a life-changing event, but it certainly is an experience that impacts how they view things.
Mm-hmm.
And... you know, in my book, we do not want to do that. So,
yeah.
And part of, you know, when you have an 18-month-old, they don't understand the concept of, you know, sitting and staying. So parents, you know, pick up their kids and haul them into the bathroom. That's different. At three, we don't want to or need to do that because kids have the cognitive ability to integrate some of these steps.
Yeah.
And so there is no hauling kids. There's no picking them up, kicking or screaming. None. There's no holding them on the potty. If they get to the potty and they say, I'm done, and they jump up after 8 seconds, there are ways to persuade a sit. But the one thing I'd like to caution parents about is to be careful about how they're sitting. If they're in that L sit, there's no pushing or peeing going on. They are holding on. And so that's why it's really important that we help them get into the sea. And we share with them that's why.
Yeah. Okay.
And we've been being really honest with kids.
Yeah. And was there any other additional language that we should share with our child about the decision to revisit the skill at a later time?
So the language that I like to use is... describe to the child, oh, your body is almost ready. Not quite, almost.
Mm-hmm.
You did just great. I'm so proud of you for your many efforts, and you're picking it up. But you know what? When there are fireworks on July 4th, that's when we'll try this again. Or right after Halloween when you wear your funny bunny costume, that's when we're going to try this again. So you reframe that they're going to be able to do it, and you're going to do it again, and you sort of tie it in with a significant event so that they have some sense of that it's going to happen again. Kids also need warning that just because it didn't work the first time, it's no big deal. Their body's just not ready yet.
Mm-hmm.
Not a failure. It's just what it is.
And I know that our time is almost up and we have so much to talk about, but maybe you could just say a little bit about reluctant poopers. Or, you know, I hear so many times parents say, oh, you know, my child's just too busy playing to stop and pee or
me
poop.
Too.
Yeah, what are some, you know, things you would like to share with parents, even though I know you can't go into all of them, but about reluctant poopers?
Sure. Well, reluctant poopers are generally those who accomplish urine training, but they don't accomplish the bowel training, then they developmentally move on. They're ready for all of those other, you know, cognitive and motor and language and social adventures. So research has shown that reluctant poopers may in fact have been sort of those babies who have difficulties pushing out their poops as infants. And so in fact there does seem to be, it's probably true that some constipation occurs with reluctant poopers and that contributes to their reluctance. So the thing that I really recommend to families is that they make sure that their kid, that they work with their pediatricians to get optimal poops. I have great conversations with the families I work with of describing what an optimal looking poop is. But it's you just want it soft enough that kids are going to have to push it out with ease, and so through diet. And sometimes with, medical support that doctors recommend, we help get the poops optimal. And then we let the kiddo know that we're going to do a poop practice weekend. And it's a variation on the potty training weekend with some shifts, which include, happily, that once they've popped a poop in the potty, then they can go about their day and do fun things. I do a variation on the 3-day weekend with reluctant poopers.
Okay. So that would also be, for instance, reluctant poopers are the children who like hold in their poop, or
correct,
like you said, only will poop in the corner and their diaper or right. Okay.
Yep.
Good. That's great. 'Cause I do hear about that a lot too.
Yeah.
So what's unique about, besides what seems like the obvious daunting task of potty training multiples?
Oh, potty training
like I
multiples.
I'm thinking of these quads that I worked with and the task that those parents had.
It is both daunting and hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
But what's unique about it truly is, and I bet you find this is true around sleep too, the notion of they all go together as a package becomes disrupted around this skill.
Yeah.
So
like some are ready for it, but before others, meaning.
Yep,
yeah.
That they have to, that I have yet to have any multiples trained on this at the same moment because they're different kids. They come from the same sack, but they are different kiddos. And this is when, and I think this that it's actually, believe it or not, almost more of a difficult parent task than a kiddo task, training multiples. Clearly it is labor intensive and time intensive, but what's really unique about it is it's one of the first times that parents are required to treat their kids separately and that their bodies truly are different. It is emotionally overwhelming for both children and parents that they get treated separately, and almost always one gets trained before the other. And so this is the time that you use the shoe analogy. Your feet are going to grow at different levels, you know, at different times.
Mm-hmm.
You might be good at reading and he might be good at math. You know, you might be good at swimming and he may love basketball. This is when we do different things for you because you need it at different times.
Mm-hmm.
So I really ask families to begin to talk about separating, not literally separating, but allowing this skill to occur separately. In fact, what does seem to happen is within a month to 6 weeks, twin two or quad three or quad four is ready to step up to it. Mm-hmm. But you really have to just, the most important thing about training is the emotional, these multiples is the emotional piece of allowing it to be a separate experience for each of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds right. You know, I see that with sleep too.
Is that true about sleep?
Yeah, they say that unless they're identicals, that they will have slightly different sleep needs. So they may, for instance, transition from two naps to one nap at a different time, just like when you have singletons, which makes logical sense.
Yeah.
It's just harder
but
to manage.
But it's hard emotionally because you want all to do what one does because
uh-huh.
it just makes it easier. But
yeah, for functioning.
It can't happen.
Although,
doesn't happen.
Don't they kind of affect each other? Like, if you
they do hilarious things.
Yeah, you
like
see your sibling going on the potty, maybe you want to go on the potty.
Like one sitting next to the other and saying, you know, come on, Corey, push that poop out. You can do it. Hilarious. Or one of them, the one who's not trained, pooping on the floor, and the other who is trained, doing a copy.
Mm-hmm.
And the parent being freaked because, oh no, the one who really is trained is now pooping on the floor because her sister did. And so then again, we coach around language to use with each of them.
Mm-hmm.
Just because your sister pooped on the floor, she wasn't ready to do this, you are. So when she poops on the floor, you say, oh, that's so silly, pretty soon you're going to put that in the potty like I'm going to do right now. So we just help reframe language.
That's great. I love it. This feels very doable, and I hope that other parents feel that too, that it's that it can happen easily if you, you know, I guess read your child right and have, you know, clear expectations and know when to let go and when to move forward. And I like it. I like your approach. I think
thank
that,
you.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really,
really
fun, and it's mm-hmm. been, you know, it has been amazingly successful, you know, over the last 15 years that I've been doing it. And
mm-hmm.
And I think I thank my families for, you know, adding to the toolkit. But I think that the basic foundation of it is that you're right, that you read your kiddo,
mm-hmm.
you don't proceed until you've got a good reading,
mm-hmm.
and then you make sure that you have armed them with all the skills they need to be successful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So tell me, I think we mentioned it a little bit, but again, I just want to wrap up by having you review what you can offer families and how they can reach you.
Okie dokie. Thank you. So hopefully there is a book and workbook on the horizon. I'm
mm-hmm.
happily seeking an agent and publisher.
Mm-hmm.
But for now, I'm available via my website to provide cheerleading for families.
Mm-hmm.
So I do a 1-hour consultation on the phone that's individualized, and I send
mm-hmm.
along the outline that goes
mm-hmm.
with it, and we work together to modify
mm-hmm.
the outline to address
mm-hmm.
this specific
mm-hmm.
youngster. Do a 1-hour phone consultation. For some families, they're like, okay, I'm ready to go. That's good. Thank you. For others, they ask for support on the potty training weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had many families say, could you please come to my house? And the answer to that is no, but I provide
uh-huh.
the phone support for them uh-huh. as they navigate the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And then for some families, for those families with kiddos who are experiencing mega bumps, I also provide individualized support that often starts out as coaching and sometimes ends up as more traditional counseling or referral for counseling around trickier issues.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. So we, of course, have your website, which is readysetgopotty.com.
Yep.
And is there a phone number or an email that you'd like to share?
There's an email link on the website, and I'm happy to have parents
mm-hmm.
first communicate with me through there, and I get back to families quickly. The one thing I ask families not to expect is that if they call me, we're going to do this, you know, on that next weekend, because I really just like parents need time to prepare, kids need time to prepare that something's going to change. About
yeah, like we're supposed to give them our 1 month warning, I believe you said.
You are. So I do ask that families don't contact me on a Friday and say that they want to begin potty training on Saturday. That just like families need time to plan for a change in something that's going to happen, kids need time to process that there's going to be a shift in how their family is approaching their potty issues. So I ask the families be planful, and that the window is that if, when I began to work with them, that they will expect that their potty training, their bye-bye diaper, hello potty party might be a month later.
Right. I remember that. You said we were going to give them the 1 month warning.
Yes.
Okay. Great. Well, thank you again, Sally, so much for joining us. And again, the website is readysetgopotty.com. And perhaps we'll be able to have you back again. Thanks so much, Sally.
Thanks a lot, Kim. Thanks for having me.